has joined.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Have you been listening to music?
Yeah, Hannah will be here in just a minute. She had to hunt for her phone.
Okay.
I just got off the phone with her.
I figured. Good afternoon. We'll start with Jamie Hood.
Has joined.
Hashem Yehud, Kud Shabri Hu, Ishkim Te, Bid Hitlo, Urchimu, Udhilo, Udhilo, Urchimu, Leakta, Leshem, Yud He, Bavathe. Beyehuda Shalim B'Shem Kol Yisrael, Limud Torah Mitzvah, Lasok Torah Mitzvah. Vayehino Amadunai Eloheinu Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Kanunei Aleinu Maasei Yadeinu Kanuneihu. Excuse me. Today's class is the Evolution of God Sefer by Rabbi Bar Sadak. We're on page 187, in the middle of the section discussing the Ein Sof. The center of the Ein Sof is the desire to be actualized, in essence to exist. Prior to creation, the Ein Sof can be said to be anti-existence, meaning the inverse and opposite of everything that was to come afterwards. Within the very nature of the Ein Sof, within every point of its non-being,
has joined,
exists the desire to be. The Ein Sof prior to creation can be said to not be, meaning to not exist by any standard of definition of existence that we can possibly fathom. In relationship to us, the Ein Sof does not exist, yet it does exist. It is just that. Its existence is non-existence, or what I call anti-existence, similar to antimatter. And if you understand this paragraph, you're doing well. Do I really need to explain what this paragraph is saying? Because it can't really be explained. It has to be experienced. Science has this concept called antimatter. Antimatter is matter, it's physicality, but you cannot perceive it, because it's not in the same frame of reference that you're in. But if I can't perceive it, how do I know it exists? And that's the paradox. The same thing is true for what is referred to as the Ein Sof. The literal translation of Ein Sof is nothing ends, or nothing end in the singular. There is no end. If there is no end, there is no beginning. If there is no end and there is no beginning, what is it? And this is the essential paradox of what we refer to in the Kabbalah as the Ein Sof. We can spend hours trying to explain that. Or we can just say there is something called the endless. It exists, but we don't have to try and perceive it because it is too high. It's too elevated. It's out of our frame of reference. Another aspect of defining the paradox that is the Ein Sof is that the Ein Sof consists of the unity of the fulfillment and the desire for that fulfillment. If I have a desire, and there is a creator that fulfills that desire, everything is in unity. But if the desire is fulfilled, there's no longer a desire. This is another way of trying to understand the paradox that is the endless world. I'm continuing. The essence or the center point of anti-existence is to turn itself inside out and to thereby exist. This existence will require the manifestation of being. Each aspect of being is therefore called a name. These were the names that the Creator sought to manifest. God's essential name is, of course, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, spoken as Hawaya. This four-letter name has at its root the verb Hoveh, He-Vav-Heh, which means to be. In Hebrew grammar, when a yud is added to a base verb, it activates that verb and transforms it into the future tense or the command tense. God's essential name, therefore, is best defined as active being or being in action. Thus, creation brought about the existence of God's name. Yet this name would not have made any sense unless there was a state of being or creation. Being comes from non-being. This is the lesson of the existence of the endless world, of the Ein Sof. While any cosmic application of this is far beyond human experience, there is a tremendous psychological lesson here. Within the Kabbalistic tradition, there has long existed a body of teachings that instructs one how the attributes of physical matter can be changed from one thing to another. This was the original form of psychic alchemy. It was not brought about using chemicals or other physical forces. Thank you. Psychic alchemy was the power of the developed enlightened mind to bend matter and physical reality at will. Obviously, this is not the system of the Zohar or of the Arizal. Rabbi Chaim Vital, however, was very well aware of this system and wrote about it, sometimes in detail, in works that remain in manuscript. Not all of Rabbi Chaim's works have been published. The majority of his works that deal with Kabbalah Ma'asit, the practical use of natural forces, to this day are mostly unheard of. Now back to our topic. But I'm not going to go back to our topic. I'm going to explain or ramble on about what Rabbi Chaim Vital has written in many different manuscripts that are not published. And it's my opinion the reason they're not published on a practical, physical level is there's not very many people who can understand their use, because their use is experiential. And the way books are taught in the modern world is not experientially. They're taught intellectually. But if you read the manuscript that Rabbi Chaim Vital wrote, sometimes from the teachings of the Ari and sometimes from other teachers, that book is telling you how to practice manipulating matter, changing matter. Because consciousness is the prevailing tool of the physical world. And that's the paradox. Because what is consciousness? It is the mental state. Without the mental state, there's no perception. Without perception, there is no being. One needs to be aware in order to perceive. Once one perceives, if it is a something physical, the consciousness can change that. Enough said, and it's time to return to the topic of the Ein Sof. The Kabbalists have always zealously guarded the secret of matter transformation. Stories abound how Kabbalists have created living beings, animal or man, out of thin air. Stories about golems should not be dismissed as mere myth. The formulas for making them have not been lost. Indeed, Rabbi Chaim himself, in his commentary to the Sefer Yetzirah, hints to such a formula. A more full version of the formula is found in other texts. The manipulation of matter is a spiritual science. There exist specific techniques how to accomplish it. There is no magic or art involved. Anyone possessing the proper psychic, psychological ingredients, and who follows the correct formula, can and will do the appropriate work, the appropriate changes in physical matter. But what is this appropriate changes? What is the psychological ingredients? What is the proper psychic ingredient? And what is the correct formula? All of these questions can be studied from a book, but they will not work until one has strengthened their psychic abilities. Until one has strengthened their psychological work, until one utilizes and practices this process. And that's why it's been lost to antiquity, even though it's not been lost. It's just because it takes a strengthening of the muscle being the mind, and the ability to do psychological input. But the psychological input must reach a certain level of consciousness, certain level of strength, for lack of a better word. Among the ingredients for this work are the knowledge and the usage of certain holy names of God. The one who masters this practice is called a master of the good name of God. In Hebrew, the term is a Baal Shem Tov. Literally, the translation of Baal is master, Shem is name, and Tov is good. A Baal Shem Tov is a master of the good name, implying that he can utilize the names of God by injecting consciousness and power into that name or with that name to make it happen. Being that this aspect of Kabbalah is not related to our present topic of the Ein Sof, I have no further need to elaborate on it. However, there is one essential ingredient to this work that is related to our discussion of the Ein Sof. All existence, physical and spiritual, matter and energy, are all referred to in Kabbalistic literature as being the Hebrew word yesh, that which is, or in a literal translation, there is. It's perception. Something is being, we can say it's yesh. Yesh comes out of the Ein, that which is not. Once the light of God manifests in the worlds of Yesh, no matter how sublime and high these worlds be, it becomes subject to a form and a pattern that cannot be tampered with without dire consequences. However, if and when a form is elevated and returned into the end, into nothingness, then it can be brought out again and shifted into another form, different from the first. Rabbi Levi Yitzhak of Berdyshev writes in his Kedushat Levi that this is the secret of psychic alchemy, of how one can turn lead into gold. He was not speaking only figuratively, he was speaking quite literally. Now there is Ein and there is Ein, meaning there is an upper Ein and a lower Ein. Which one is being referred to in the Kedushat Levi can be debated. But we will discuss more about that of the lower Ein in its place when we learn about the Sephirot of Keter. What you learn from this paragraph is that the Ein Sof above Keter. Nothing is above Keter, and that's a play on words, because nothing is something. And that's the problem with language. But we can perceive something that comes from nothing, as opposed to something that comes from something. In Hebrew, there are two words. One is bara. It means creation. The other is yetzirah, and its translation is formation. The upper level, yesh miayin, something from nothing. The lower level is yesh miyesh, something from something. One is creation. And one is transformation. In order to change lead into gold, Rabbi Bar Sadak is not telling us that we need to connect the Yesh Miayin. He's saying we need to connect to Yesh Miyesh, because the lead becomes the cause of the gold. Now I'm continuing to read. Elevating physical matter, which is yesh, and restoring it to in is also the necessary technique in creating a golem. As is known, a golem is created through the manipulation of the 231 gates of the Hebrew letters according to formulas found in the Sefer Yetzirah. Interestingly, enough, nowhere in this greatest work, the Etz Chaim, does Rabbi Chaim Vital address in detail the creation and the source of these 231 gates. Although he does not mention it, other Kabbalists have. A contemporary and possibly competitor with Rabbi Chaim Vital was Rabbi Israel Sarug. Rabbi Sarug claims to have been a student of the Arizal, apparently at some other time than was Rabbi Chaim. The only possibility of this happening was when the two, the Arizal and Rabbi Sarug, were both living in Egypt prior to the Arizal's ascent to Tzfat and meeting with Rabbi Chaim. Rabbi Sarug's meeting, or Rabbi Sarug's teaching of the Kabbalah also claimed to be the teachings of the Arizal, yet his system is radically different from that of Rabbi Chaim. Rabbi Chaim's connection to the Arizal is documented historical facts. Rabbi Zarug's connection to is only conjecture. Nonetheless, it was the teachings of Rabbi Zarug that were widely disseminated throughout Europe in the name of the Arizal and laid the foundation for serious differences between the Ashkenazim and the Sephardic Kabbalistic schools for the last 400 years. And to give you one possibility of reconciling these statements by Rabbi Bar Sadok, one could visualize and realize that Rabbi Zarug was the one student of the Arizal in a totally different dimension, a totally different time frame or timeline, and that the two timelines are parallel, and there are is ability of some people to transfer between these timelines and bring the teachings across the timelines, so that Rabbi Zarug's teaching, while not explained from the Arizal, is from the Arizal, but in a different time frame, timeline. That is one explanation of how to resolve what appears to be a conflict. Rabbi Zarug explains in his most famous work that the world of the 231 gates of Hebrew letters exists above Adam Kadmon, in the worlds that Rabbi Chaim tells us is forbidden to contemplate. Apparently, Rabbi Zarug did not agree with Rabbi Chaim on this point. He and many other European Kabbalists after him spoke about the worlds above Adam Kadmon and about the Ein Sof itself. Although the European Kabbalistic schools are full of such teachings, their Sephardi Middle Eastern counterparts consider such teachings forbidden. Therefore, there is not much dialogue between the two schools on these matters. Nonetheless, this does not mean that the Sephardi schools did not discuss the importance of the Ein Sof. Its importance is clearly described in detail. It is just its essence that is not discussed. The meditative kavanot system of the Arizal and Rabbi Shalom Zarabi who is known as the Rashash focuses ultimately upon the Ein Sof. The purpose of prayer and the performance of the mitzvot, they write, is to release the fallen sparks of holiness that have fallen from their spiritual abodes above into these worlds, which are below. Yet these sparks must be elevated above, world above world, until they are restored to the Ein Sof itself. Indeed, all prayers, regardless of whatever name of God is used, must always be directed to the Ein Sof. For all the names of God are but his vessels. Only the Ein Sof is truly the essence of the Creator. Anyone violating or confusing this matter is considered to be performing idolatry. recognizing the unity of God, therefore, is the primary Torah mitzvah. This brings us to understand and appreciate the need for our knowledge of the Ein Sof. In spite of our knowledge of any created world, including the realm of the Sephirot, we must always know that underlying all existence, there is but one unity. We must take to heart and bear in mind at all times that everything in existence and in anti-existence all comes from one source. This source is the one true mind, the one true heart, the one true soul. Is the one essence of all. This is the Ein Sof that defines all and decides it decides all. This is the one of whom we speak when we say Shema Yisrael. Hashem, our God, Hashem is one. Whenever we recite a traditional blessing over a mitzvah or over a food, when we say the words Melech HaOlam, King of the world, King of the universe, we should momentarily contemplate that God is the Ein Sof, and that all sparks of holiness ascend up to him. As the source, the Ein Sof also reveals to us a significant aspect of the development of the human personality. As Rabbi Chaim Vital has written, the purpose of creation was for Hashem to be called by his names. Indeed, in the beginning of the of his Sefer, Etz Chaim, Rabbi Chaim suggests that Hashem, in a way, would not have been complete without creation. He needed to be called by his names in order for him to be what he is. All that Hashem was, all that Hashem is, and all that Hashem will be exists in the Ein Sof, in the unmanifested form. The order of creation only manifests that which was previously unmanifest and undifferentiated. The human unconscious mind houses our own personal Ein Sof. During the process of meditation, we must go deeper and deeper into the recesses of the human mind until we reach a point where our individual human mind no longer exists as a separate entity unto itself. More than this, we must go deeper than the collective mind, which even Jungian psychology has shown us that we all share. Excuse me. The process of meditation must take us beyond thought, beyond awareness of self, and take us to the place of nullification of self. This is the Bitul Hayesh, spoken of in Kabbalistic and Hasidic literature. Only in this place does one touch the Ein Sof. At the smallest point of its touching our world, from this place, the human mind and soul is refreshed in life, in purpose, and in meaning. Indeed, the truly wise know how to come out from this experience differently from how they went in. These enlightened souls can use this change to transform the world around them, to bring rain, as did Eliyahu Hanavi, to create a golem, as did the Maharal of Prague, or to turn lead into gold, as did other Kabbalists. You'll notice that Rabbi Bar Sadok did not define this term, Bitul Hayesh. Hayesh is the essence. Bitul is not a word that is easy to translate. And that's why he did not. Continuing to read. It is only by our recognizing that there is a universal constant that transcends the universe itself that enables us to truly know ourselves and our places in existence. It is as if there is an unwritten book of creation that existed prior to the first act of creation. The Sefer Yetzirah writes that God created his universe with three things. With the Sefer, which is the book. Which is the Sapar, which is the reader, someone to read the book. And the Sipur, the story that is written in the book. You need all three, and you need to know that they are one. They cannot be separated. Such that even using the three words, Sefer, Sapar, Sipur, creates separation. And this is the limitation of language. Although there are variant readings, this is the oldest and most correct. The first thing that Hashem used to create his universe was the Sefer, or the book. This book is the Ein Sof. Herein was everything written and everything included. Yet unlike other books, this one was closed and unread. It required a reader who could read it and embellish the reading with passion and emotion. From this unique style of reading, the book comes to life. Prior to this, the book is just a mumble-jumble concoction of letters without rhyme or reason, at least to our eyes. The essence of the Ein Sof therefore explains to us the true nature of God. It It reveals to us the ultimate and essential unity of all in creation. It is the source and power of all. Without it, nothing can exist. Achieving a connection with it in meditation is the goal of the Kabbalist. However, no Kabbalist can ever be aware if such a connection is made. The reason is that the Ein Sof exists worlds above the limitation of even the greatest minds and souls, human and man, human and non-human. No created thing can be cognizant in the face of the Ein Sof, for in it all things are nullified. One needs to contemplate this paragraph. One who says that he or she has touched the Ein Sof is by definition self-deceived. All one can do is seek nullification of self, which is bitul hayesh. Focus on restoring the fallen sparks of holiness to their source in the Ein Sof, and then Hashem in his grace will do the rest. Above and beyond any intent or awareness of ours, the process of creation has been discussed in many places. This is the concept of the Tzimtzum, when God withdraws his light from the center of the Ein Sof and thereby creates a space, a place for a universe and others to receive from him existence. The Tzimtzum, however, is not what many believe it to be, for there can never really be an empty space, a vacuum void of the presence of the Creator. As we shall see in our next essay, the Tzimtzum and what was in it is a many-detailed thing. There are echoes of light, the creation of the 231 gates of letters, Olam Hamalbush, the world of cloaking, and the mysterious Tehiru. Although he hinted to these worlds, Rabbi Chaim Vital never discussed anything about them in any of his writings. Therefore, we will have to go to other, more esoteric sources to understand the formations of the primordial universe prior to the manifestation of Adam Kadmon. That is the completion of our class today. Are there questions or comments or thoughts? Hopefully there will be questions or thoughts or processes that will come later, and I will be available to answer those questions or comments or thoughts whenever you feel the need. I bid you all to have a wonderful class, a wonderful day, a wonderful week, and I bid you all Shalom Gadol.
I know it was awesome.
Too much.
And then
I put into words or even questions.
Hanok?
Yes, Malka. Go ahead.
Can we post that so we can go through it slowly?
Talking about the recording, yes.
Yes, yes, the recording, please.
As soon as I have the recording, I will post it.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.
I keep trying to post everything. I keep running out of time.
I know. This was so in-depth.
But this class, I think I have posted everything that we have done in this class.
Yes, okay.
I just haven't done it in one place.
Okay.
In the sense that it's one place because it all starts with the recordings file.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to the bottom of the recordings file, you'll find that there are 10 previous recordings files. So you have to go through them to find it. And I purposely did that because that effort gives you the merit to learn.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I'm a sadist.
We understand.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And Hana, I did hear your comment. I do understand that it's very difficult to be able to verbalize a question about a subject that requires the experiential.
Right. Well, like Rabbi Levi Yitzhak, it was just a few weeks ago, it was his hulah.
Correct.
Rabbi Sarabi, that's a new person to me. I mean, there was quite a bit that was, well, I'll say quite a bit. There were several things that I don't remember. It seemed like I remember the word betul in some other frame of reference, and I can't remember which frame of reference. And, you know, and of course, the 231 gates, I know from the Sefer Yetzirah, which I thought experientially was opening up some areas. It's just, it's like there's so much going on in our physical lives and trying to keep up with the classes. You know, it's just a lot. And to me, it floats around in my head. And then it's like when I finally get to have quiet and everybody's gone to bed and, you know, you're by yourself and you can concentrate on some of these things, and that they begin to start being putting in place. What's the next step? Like, I'm still remembering that I haven't sent my Zadaka in honor of Rabbi Levi Yitzhak. You know, it's little things, but the little steps lead to the bigger steps, if that makes sense of anything. But this was probably the most difficult of all the chapters so far.
Wait till the next one.
I'm sorry, but
I said wait till the next chapter.
Well, see, I've never heard of Olam HaMabush. And I say when I haven't heard, maybe I heard it and don't remember it. You know.
Or it was defined in English and you never made the connection to the Hebrew.
Right.
But ultimately, one thing that you said that you need to consider an alternative to it.
Okay.
The difference between one meditation and another is the strengthening of the muscle that allows you to meditate. Now, we know that there is no muscle that allows you to meditate. But the more you meditate, the more you strengthen the process. The more you make the process available to you, and the more you strengthen it, the more you strengthen it, the more gasoline that you put into the car. But what do you mean by putting gasoline into the car? That's the idea of practice. Practice emboldens the process. It strengthens the process. It activates the process. Is there any difference between the words I said? Activates, emboldens. The real essence is, if everything is one, there's no separation. But if I say something's emboldened, and then I say something is active, and something is passionate, I'm creating separation. But there is no separation. That's what meditation gives you the insight about.
We have a little thing with male and female, and husband and wife being one. That we, you know, we have an inkling of that meaning of no separation and one being coming from one. And the world of the endless, I mean, you know, even though we say we're not going to go to that frame of reference, you still come back in your mind that that's what it is. This is the world of the endless. And then you kind of relax and you say to yourself, okay, when I'm ready, I'll be shown. I'll be shown the next step. And the steps are coming so fast, it's, you know, it's hard as a woman that has so many jobs to do, you know, and we have to be patient and we have to take it step by step. And I guess I've said enough.
Well, I have two comments to make.
Okay.
One is, you have to realize that there's two partners in a marriage. There's the male and the female. The female is the one that is knowledgeable, and the male is the one who doesn't listen.
Oh, boy, could I ever tell you? I'm sorry.
But you have to remember that that's the definition of a husband.
Mm-hmm.
The partner who doesn't listen.
But then one day he finally starts asking all these questions, especially on Shabbat. You know, so.
And I need to get down to the advanced reincarnation class, so which will be starting momentarily.
Okay, thank you.
You take care.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.